All right.
Did you hear that?
I don't think so. Although I did hear something. I thought it came from my house, though.
What was it? Yeah, May sneezed.
No, I did not hear this.
She has promised that the sneezing will cease from now on. How she will control this, I don't know. It's been really windy today.
Holding her breath the whole time, I assume. Yeah.
Self-inflicted asphyxiation.
Welcome to Direct-to-Video.
VHS?
It's a podcast where we pair movies like fine wine.
Mm-hmm.
I am your host, Tony Robusto.
I am your host, Andy Reyes.
This might be the first time I have watched a movie and thought to myself, this would be an okay radio show. This might also be the first time I have watched a movie and thought to myself, do you know what looks better than this movie? The latest in the Swan Princess series.
I truly anything.
This is by far the ugliest movie that we have watched for this, which is genuinely saying something.
It's on the one hand, there's a part of me that's like, well, it's 2005, you know, but like what else came out in 2005? I don't know. Actually, let me check.
I was going to say that at the end of that sentence.
I was hoping that by the time I got to that sentence, I would like I would have this page pulled up. But like we're talking like Chicken Little, right? Jesus Christ! I wish this list was a little bit more. We're talking Kronk's New Groove. Like we're talking Mulan 2. Wow, really? We're talking Pooh's Heffalump movie. That movie's actually okay.
I mean, of those movies.
We're talking Tarzan 2. Like, in 2005, Madagascar, robots.
I mean, to be honest, not great-looking movies, but all of them looked better than this one.
That's the thing, is like, I don't remember these movies looking amazing, but this movie looks so bad. It's astounding that it got a theatrical release at all.
Riding Hood's face does not articulate.
And when it does, I hate it.
There are two things that her face does. Her mouth moves and her eyebrows raise. Sometimes mm-hmm. one, sometimes both.
Yeah.
As far as I can tell, that's the only thing that she ever does with her face. And if this movie had no humans in it, I might find it a little bit easier to deal with. Because you can have janky-looking animals a little bit mm-hmm. easier than janky-looking humans. But it's a Red Riding Hood movie, so they have Red fucking Riding Hood, and it's rough.
And we're going to talk about why this movie looks like this. Because there's a lot to talk about, thankfully, once we're done talking with this movie. There's not much to talk about when it comes to the film itself. But first, let's talk about this cast.
Sorry, before the cast, I do want to mention something. It's not a big... It's just... Occasionally, because of where we are in 2024, mm-hmm. I'll be watching a movie, and the first thing that happens is I get a bad taste in my mouth.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Anyway, the Weinstein Company produced this. And I was just like, immediately, I hate this.
I will say, like, you know, and there's no way I can say this in a way that isn't serious. Convicted rapist Harvey Weinstein did have his fingers all over this movie, which sucks.
Hey, there is not a sentence that makes this movie suck worse than that.
Yeah, and it is integral. It is kind of a big part of this movie. So, because prior to the Weinstein Company picking up the film for production, it had an entirely different voice cast.
So is the cast because it was getting backing from the Weinstein Company?
Yes. The Weinstein Company wanted notable celebrity actors specifically for distribution purposes.
And also Patrick Warburton.
And Patrick Warburton, I believe, is the only voice actor who retained their original role. Everyone else either got replaced or shifted. You know, like the big ones are, I think Red Riding Hood was originally voiced by Tara Strong.
Okay, she could have done fine. She's good at that.
Jim Belushi replaced David Ogden Steers as the woodsman.
Huh.
Anthony Anderson came in to be the stork. And Glenn Close was... Oh, cat. That was that my cat or your cat?
I think that was your cat, but at the same time, my cat walked in. They're doing they're doing one of those mind melds.
Yeah, they're connecting in the drift. Glenn Close was brought in to replace Sally Struthers. So, like, literally everybody was replaced except for Patrick Warburton.
Glenn Close, by the way, was not giving an inspired performance. But to be fair, she had a bad character.
Of all the characters,
I find Granny to be bad. End of thought. Just completely, I'm sure we'll get into it, but I am so glad that we have, as a culture, moved away from, isn't it funny if an old lady does extreme sports?
Everything about this movie feels like it's stuck in the early 2000s. Like, yeah. The fact that it's funny that Red knows martial arts, that's just a joke.
Mm-hmm. This movie was clearly informed by Shrek.
Oh, yeah. 100%.
But somehow has like a quarter of the charm. And Shrek, I want to be definite about something. Mm-hmm. I don't find Shrek to be a charming movie exactly.
No.
Because it has a lot of the same problems of just like, oh, we're kind of making fun of ourselves. But and you know, all the other like little irritating things in it, or big irritating mm-hmm. things. But this one is like, I guess it's one of those movies that feels like it was made to be sold, you know? Like, oh, we're going to do this because we know it'll make money. And that's not interesting to me.
No, I do think that, I think part of the charm of Shrek, and I hate to say this, but as star-studded as the cast of Hoodwinked is, they are not, other than Patrick Warburton, who is genuinely like the only thing about this movie that is like watchable. No one else in the movie is like giving as a memorable a performance as everyone in Shrek is. Like,
I do want to give a little bit of kudos to David Ogden Steers.
Oh, yes. Who
does play a detective frog. Basically, he plays the, I can't remember James Bond's name. But he basically plays the detective in Glass Onion.
Yes, yes.
God damn, that was the wrong movie. That was the right movie, but I was trying to thaw Knives Out. Okay.
Knives Out. Hold on. Daniel Craig.
Yeah. And, like, he does okay. A lot of other characters are just, like, just making bad jokes.
I think a big part of the problem is that we have a room full of people who have never really done voice acting before. And we've complained before about the, like, voice acting is a different skill.
Mm-hmm.
And David Ogden Steers and Patrick Warburton are the only people in the main cast who have like pretty significant amount of experience doing this kind of work. And it shows. Everyone else feels either flat or is just annoying.
Yeah, they are.
So the plot of the movie.
Yeah, all right. So we get this opening. It's Little Red Riding Hood. We are told there's a fucking storybook and everything. We are told that
truly like cribbing off of Shrek, which is cribbing off of like early Disney princess films, right?
Yeah. But when Shrek did it, I won't say it was original, but at least it was like parodying something that made sense for it to parody. And yeah. This one's just like, we're just stealing that.
Mm-hmm.
And they do the Little Red Riding Hood. Red Riding Hood walks into her granny's house. There's a wolf in a mask. They do the whole, what big hands you have, all this stuff. Granny pops out of the closet, tied up, and then a woodsman breaks in through the window and they all start screaming at each other. Then it cuts to the police coming to the house. Now, what they have not explained, what they don't ever explain, is who called the police. Because as far as I can tell, nobody wants to be here, so I don't know who would have called the police.
Yeah, whose idea was this, you know?
But I guess, because my issue is that like the scene ends with them all screaming at each other. But mm-hmm. then it cuts to the police and it's like, okay, so like, did they stop screaming at each other, sit down and say, let's call the police to handle this?
Mm-hmm. I think the implication is that the real villain of the story called the police. And we'll get to that.
I suppose we'll have to. So
it's integral to the plot, you know? So like,
yeah. So then Detective Nikki Flippers comes in.
Great name for a frog detective.
It's not bad. And he comes in and he says, oh, well, we have four suspect series, we have four stories, we have to listen to everybody's story. Sort of a, what you call it, what, like a Poirot type figure?
Yeah, 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 he's...
I solve mysteries by talking to everybody, not by looking around for clues, you know?
Yeah, yeah, I don't fucking go around picking up cigarette butts. That's like Sherlock Holmes shit.
Yeah, I don't measure footprints. What the fuck is that?
What's wrong with you? I'm classy. I just talk to people and then catch them out on their lies. Come on. Yeah. Some Phoenix Wright type stuff, which I like. I like that. I think that works, especially. But the problem that I have with
it's
this framing device
theme,
is...
And it actually could have been a good theme here.
Yes.
But it's just... I mean, I think they're just not putting enough effort into making it a good story.
And we'll get to that. Part of the problem, I think, with it, though, is that immediately what this movie is telling me is you're going to watch the same movie four times. I hope you're ready for that.
Yeah.
I hope you're ready to watch the same movie four times. And the truth is that I'm not ready.
Have you seen After Party?
I have not.
I'm going to talk about it for a second.
Yeah, no problem.
In the Apple TV show After Party...
This explains why I haven't seen it.
Yeah. As far as I'm concerned, you have to go looking for a TV show that's on Apple TV. In After Party, it is a high school reunion after party, and the most famous person from that high school class is killed. And a police detective shows up, and she has to solve this case right now or it's going to be taken away from her. And she thinks that whoever else gets the case is just going to arrest somebody, and so the case will be done. So she has to solve it right now, so she doesn't let anybody leave and just individually talks to them in their room. And so you get a different version of the story, like five or six times. Like, there are a lot of characters. Mm-hmm. But here's the thing, is one of those versions is animated, and one of those versions is a musical, and one of those versions is like an action movie.
That kicks ass. That's so good.
Yes. And so the point is that like each of these people are telling different stories and it's all their version of the truth. In this movie, everything that these people are saying is exactly true. They just don't have all of the information, which is way less interesting.
So to kind of bring it back around to the other side, right, which is Knives Out, which you brought up earlier, right? In the first half of Knives Out is this structure. It is just listening to all of these people describe the same kind of night. And like we, and you know, because if you've seen Knives Out, we as the viewer already know kind of what happened.
You come into Knives Out with a lot of information, and it's the best thing about that movie.
It's so good because it means that instead of paying attention to what these people are saying that's true, you get to pay attention to what these people are saying that can't possibly be true. Like, I think the best thing about Knives Out is the fact that every single person telling this story is standing next to the patriarch of the family who is murdered when he blows out the candles.
Oh, yes!
It's such a good... Because they are all under this impression that, like, they are his favorite.
They're the main character. I'm the main character in this story. So I was standing there.
How does Knives Out make this interesting? If, like you said, you're getting the same information, it makes it interesting because you know all of these people are lying. And so the question is, why are they lying? What is it that they're hiding exactly?
If somebody in this movie was lying, that would just be amazing.
That would be so good. But the problem is that everybody in this movie is telling the truth.
Yeah, and they're all very innocent. In fact, it really tries to milk the concept that Red feels personally betrayed, that her granny does death-defying stunts and keeps it a secret from her. And frankly, I don't give a shit. Like, that's the closest thing to, like, a lie. And it's not even a lie because as soon as Granny starts telling her story, that's, like, a major part of it.
It's a lie between the two characters.
But it's not a lie to the audience.
Yeah.
I should feel the twist. I should feel a twist. There should be a twist. They even give up on the idea of having the twist villain really be a twist quite quickly.
Oh, it's so fast. I haven't seen this movie in, when did it come out? 2005? 20 years? Jesus Christ. And immediately I was like, oh, I remember now who the bad guy is. As soon as I saw them, because the plot of this movie is so simple, but also it like
meanders, I guess.
Yeah. I watched this movie yesterday and literally I was like, if I talk about this movie to anybody, it's going to fall out of my mind.
Yeah.
I have to like not talk about it so that I have something to say. But the basic plot of the movie, the mystery is not why are all these people trying to kill each other? It's we think one of these people is the recipe bandit. And viewer, listener, you might be thinking to yourself, what's that? Good question. It has nothing to do with everything we just described. Somebody is stealing recipes.
Yeah, I mean, to be as fair as I will allow myself to be to this movie, the inciting incident in Red's story is that there is a recipe bandit. She delivers cookies for Granny. She's mm-hmm. going to take the recipe book. Now, what is not explained is who bakes the cookies, because apparently the recipe book is over where Red is, but that's like miles and miles away from where Granny is.
And Granny's not baking the cookies.
I guess not. So who's baking the fucking cookies? Because she says she's a delivery girl for Granny.
Yeah, there is a whole existence of an enterprise, of an industry here that we just don't get to see. And let's be fair, it's because the movie doesn't have the money to show us that.
The movie also doesn't care to show us that.
Yeah, and also it doesn't care. But yeah, like who knows? Magic.
It also does this, the movie does this thing where they're all in the woods. They are all in the past, but it is also modern and there are roads everywhere and cars and stuff. And that's a really hard needle to thread for me. It can kind of work, but it's not working here. Anyway, so Red wants to take the recipe book to her granny so it doesn't get stolen. She gets on the fucking, what do they call it? It's like a funicular or something.
A cable car.
Falls out of it, as far as I could tell, even though we saw it four times, was not pushed, although it would have made sense if she was.
I think it's just that the doors opened, but because she was leaning on the doors.
All right. When I saw it, I was like, oh, this bunny is bad at his job as cable car operator because he let Red fall out of the cable car.
Oh,
but then
see,
the bunny turns out to be the big bad guy, and it doesn't look like he pushed her out of the cable car.
So I could tell you right now that I thought, oh, the bunny pushed her out of the cable car. The bunny's in on it.
Right.
But then later we find out that the bunny doesn't push her. He just pulls the emergency release lever, which, by the way, you don't have that shit on the door. That's crazy. It's next to the door.
Anyway, she falls out. She gets attacked by this wolf who wants the basket, and then she makes her way to Granny's house, and the thing happens. That's basically her entire story. I don't know if you want to fill anything in.
She goes on a roller coaster ride with a singing goat.
She does meet this singing goat, and I will be fair about this singing goat. He was borderline entertaining.
I thought the singing goat was funny. I laughed at the singing goat. I'm ashamed of it. I laughed at the singing goat like four times.
Here's the thing about the singing goat is I fucking could not stand Red Riding Hood in that scene. This singing goat tells her, I have a disability where I sing. And she just stands there like, oh, could you stop singing? Bitch.
He explained to you in the song twice.
She is being pretty rude about it.
My man's been cursed by a witch. Like, that's nobody's fault.
And he is a fun character. He might be the first and last fun character, actually.
No.
The other side characters are not fun.
Oh, I guess if we're talking about side characters, yes. He's the only background character that has, like, a purpose outside of the story.
The wolf has a sidekick, and I fucking hate him.
Oh, nice. Voiced by the director, by the way.
Well, he did a bad job.
He did. No, I will admit, he does do a bad. Usually when you say that, it's like fun trivia, but in this case, it's like, don't quit your day job.
I mean, to be fair, his voice is probably sped up. So it's not like his performance is the problem as much as the conceit of the character is a problem, which might still be his fault.
There are voice actors who I'm reminded of the fucking squirrel in Over the Hedge.
Yeah, yeah, there's a squirrel in Over the Hedge that they do the same fucking joke with.
But it's
where at the end they give him coffee.
But that squirrel is voiced by Steve Carell, I believe.
Does he just do it really fast? Because that's funny. I will admit.
I don't know. But I was gonna point to Tom Kenny, who is in this movie.
Tom Kenny's in this movie?
He absolutely is in this movie. He was Tom supposed
Kenny as Tommy. I don't know who the fuck Tommy is.
I don't know who the fuck
yes,
Tommy
I
is
do.
Either.
He is one of those horrifying looking children.
Oh, is he the one of the fucking not strudel? God
not
forgive
strudel.
Me.
That's some kind of sausage, I think. What's a Polish sausage?
I cannot. I am on strudel now, and I know it's wrong, but I don't know why. What else it could be? Hold on, I'm reading the Wikipedia.
Schnitzel.
Help me. Schnitzel.
It's schnitzel. He's like one of the screaming schnitzel kids.
Jesus Christ. Well, he was supposed to be the voice of one of the main characters, God knows who. But Tom Kenny plays
a
lot of...
Which is a fucking waste of Tom Kenny.
It is such a huge waste of talent. Tom Kenny's voiced a lot of fast-talking characters, and he can do it.
Do you know how many times Tom Kenny has made me cry? Like,
we don't need to get into that.
Or laugh. He's a fun guy.
He's a fun guy. He's a hard-working dude.
I was an adult before I realized that he was the live-action pirate on SpongeBob.
I was this old right now when I found out there was a live-action pirate in SpongeBob.
Now, he sometimes hosts it and claims to be SpongeBob's biggest fan.
Interesting.
In, like,
that's really
in like
funny.
Special episodes. Patchy the Pirate, his name is. He actually did a lot of other stuff in SpongeBob, it turns out. Anyway, point is.
He's a hard-working guy. And he can do it. He can do the work. And it's like, if you have Tom Kenny in the studio, like, get him in here to do the hard work, you know? Don't throw him at one of these kids.
Don't give him, like, two lines as a kid. He's probably happy to get the paycheck, but Christ.
I don't think he was, though, because it was a significant... It's a significantly smaller paycheck.
Yeah, it would have to be.
Because he did... Here's the fucked up thing. Sorry, we're going to talk about this now. They did all of the line work. They recorded the whole fucking movie.
Oh my God.
And then, after the Weinstein Company came in to distribute it, they re-recorded everything, which meant that these people got paid for the initial recording, but got no residuals, which means they got paid the ass.
So anyway, then it's Patrick Warburton's turn to talk.
The Wolf W. Wolf, which I assume stands for Wolf, 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 which is very good.
Not bad. There are good jokes in this movie. It's just this movie doesn't have, like, the charm to actually pull them off.
Yeah.
Wolf W. Wolf, it turns out he's a reporter, and the name of his column is Facts and Fairy Tales, which is just genuinely a very good column name.
It's great. It's a good
If I wrote a column that I assume was as like an investigative reporter, it might be called Facts and Fairy Tales because that's solid.
Sidebar. Apparently, yeah. Disney's Big Bad Wolf, his full name is Zeke Midas Wolf, which is such a cool name.
Zeke Midas Wolf.
Yeah.
That is a strange name. I wonder if there was a joke that his middle name was Midas.
I cannot tell you.
And they made it canon.
Yeah, I don't know where that name comes from, but it's such a
it's so specific.
It says in parentheses next to it real name. Wikipedia, I'm gonna need you to like lay off a little bit. His real name is the Big Bad Wolf. Anyway, I like this character a lot. One, I just like Patrick Warburton. I think his voice is just, again, it's like naturally funny and charming. He's got a good, and he plays this character very, like, dry.
His dry performance is, like, the best sell of the movie.
Yeah.
The problem is, as the movie goes on, it becomes very clear that he's technically a side character, and this movie is about Red and Granny.
A shame.
Who I don't care about.
Not the worst choice. There's a worse choice, but, like, not a good choice.
Patrick Warburton is investigating this series of crimes, these series of thefts. And Red is the only one who hasn't gotten her shit stolen. So, obviously, he's gonna investigate her. And then as soon as he starts investigating her, she starts doing weird shit, like taking a recipe book up to Granny's and being all sneaky about it. So he starts chasing her. obviously.
He's convinced that they have to be the Goody Bandit. That's the name of the thief, by the way, is the Goody Bandit.
Uh-huh. He keeps, when he gets face-to-face with Red, he says the word goody about 30 times. He's like, yeah, your granny makes good goodies. Just like over and over again. And it's like, you're not very good at this.
Yeah, I think the joke, one of the jokes in the film is that he's, in spite of all the work he puts into his journalistic career, he's kind of bad at being undercover.
Yeah, so he ends up chasing her, which seems like a real whiff.
You can't be seen chasing. I don't care who you are. I don't care what species you are. You can't be seen chasing around teenage girls in the forest. You just can't.
It's worse if you're a wolf, though.
It is absolutely 100% worse if you're a wolf.
The implications.
You got to keep that stuff in check.
Yeah.
Red outwits him.
As far as it goes.
Yeah. And as, you know, by this movie's definition.
I suppose I'll mention it. Red has princess powers, and she has no fucking reason to.
She's not a princess.
She's got Disney princess animal friends who will just, like, come out of nowhere and be like, oh, we're gonna help you. So, like, she puts her hood on these hummingbirds and gets the wolf to chase him off a cliff. Shit like that.
Especially in a world where animals are just, like, citizens, right?
Yes. So, like, why do these animals like her so much? I guess she delivers a lot of chocolates and stuff, but whatever.
There's also no normal food. All these creatures and humans eat are candy and cookies and shit. And schnitzel. And schnitzel if you're a human boy.
Well, it's probably the best case scenario because they could be eating each other.
There's a guy in the movie who is like a human man, but he's dressed like a white tiger. And I don't know what the joke is supposed to be there, but I don't like it. Gives me pervert vibes, and I don't like it.
So the wolf beats her to Granny's house by taking an underground tunnel, and then because he has no fucking follow up plan, dresses up like Granny and jumps into her bed to try to trick Red into giving him the stolen goods so he can prove it for his column.
Because that's what he thinks is going on.
Yes.
And now we get the woodsman's side of the story?
Yes.
I hate this character with every fiber of my being. One, he's not a woodsman.
No.
He's a criminal. He's a food truck driver who wants to be an actor, which is fine. Like, it's a fine choice. I don't understand why he couldn't just be a woodsman who wanted to be an actor, which I think is funnier, actually. If a woodsman goes in to, like, I want to play Paul Bunyan in a role, and they're like, I just don't think you're woodsman enough.
A large part of his
joke?
Character is a tough word, but a large joke of his character, I suppose, is that he's foreign.
Yeah, he's like German.
Which is nothing.
No.
And it sucks that that's like the main joke of his character. I feel like the joke is supposed to be that he's an idiot, okay?
Yeah.
But if he was an American idiot, sorry, I just, song started playing in my head.
Yeah, I can't imagine.
then it would just be like, oh, this is classic dumb character. But because he's German, it feels like some kind of culturally charged dumb character. And it's like, is he dumb, or does he just not know like every third word people are saying because he's foreign? I don't know. I mean, to be fair, he seems pretty fucking dumb.
Yeah, I mean, on the one hand, I don't give a shit about like German people. They've done enough. They can take a couple of lumps, you know?
They can, but I needed an earned lump. You know when all Germans were evil for a while? That I got.
Yeah, absolutely. 100% makes sense. I just don't get what this gives to the movie other than making me hate myself. Because it's terrible. Like, the song that he sings about his stupid schnitzel truck is terrible. The children who he feeds are the worst. They look horrendous.
They're bad, just like, man.
I don't like hate Jim Belushi, But this performance is so empty and nothing. All it is the dumb voice, and it is truly like F-tier SNL shit. And I need more from a feature film.
Is there anything important that happens with his character? So he's...
No.
He's an actor. He's trying to hawk Paul Bunyan foot cream. His schnitzel truck gets stolen from, but it's okay because he gets a callback for the foot cream, and they tell him to basically go into the wood to start chopping down trees so he'll be in character. And because of his antics, he ends up bursting through the window, axe-drawn, accidentally, basically.
It is genuinely a feat of this movie that they took one of the most integral characters to the original fairy tale and made me go, I just don't understand why he's in the movie at all.
So then we get Extreme Granny.
Have you seen the movie Triple X, Tony? Do you remember Vin Diesel's Triple X?
I have not watched Vin Diesel's Triple X or Triple X 2, the Return of Xander Cage, all right?
Starring Ice Cube, I believe.
What about Triple X?
That's what this is a joke about. This is a joke about Triple X.
Because she has three G's.
Yes, because she has three G's in the back of her neck.
It's just that I kind of refuse to believe that Extreme Granny wasn't already played out. I feel like the first moment you got an Extreme Granny, it was already played out.
It's one of those things where it's like not that funny a joke because like, I don't know, like, yeah, people get old, you know?
Yeah, there's this YouTuber that I stumbled across the other day who's just like a 70-year-old woman who like is really into Persona.
That's amazing. That's so good.
And like she has this really long video about like this difficult time in her life and how during this difficult time she discovered video games like late in life. And like that's amazing.
That's so great. Good.
And I would hate for somebody like that who is a complicated person to be boiled down to like, this is my one thing. Isn't it funny?
Yeah. As if it's like a punchline that people have hobbies.
Yeah.
Cause I don't know. It's just weird. It's just so nothing. And especially in like, maybe in 2005, the idea of a grandma doing anything is funny.
Oh, that's so sad.
But I don't know. I just like, similar to what you said, like I've seen so many like YouTube videos. Like I follow a guy on YouTube who's just like an old Japanese man who loves to paint. He's a fucking good painter. Like he's a ridiculously good painter. It's kind of astounding watching him just do his thing, right? But like he started the YouTube channel because his son was like, oh, I want to have something of your hobby to like remember. And then he really enjoyed the process of making the video and started doing it himself without his son. That's kick-ass. That's awesome.
That is kick-ass.
It turns out that like when you turn 60, you don't just like turn to dust Thanos style and cease to exist. Like you're still a human with interests and hobbies and you want to continue doing them, you know?
The best version of a person is constantly discovering new things to enjoy in the world.
Absolutely.
And it would be a real shame if you think to yourself, oh, because I am a certain age, I can't find anything new to do. That fucking sucks. I hate that.
It's true.
But that is the assumption that makes Extreme Granny funny. Otherwise, there's no joke.
And so, therefore, there is no joke. And so we get to spend 20, 10, 15, 15 minutes. This is a short movie.
It's an impossible amount of time because it's not very long, but honestly, it's a slog.
86 minutes, and yet it feels like a nightmare.
Granny starts skiing down these fucking slopes.
She's shredding.
Three other skiers are literally assassins.
It's four.
I don't care how many there are. Sent to kill her. At one point, her skis just become a snowboard, and I got pretty mad about it.
It's they are different. They are built different. One of these assassins is just Arnold Schwarzenegger, and that pisses me off.
There's no, again, it's, they didn't even get Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yeah, no, this is just a bad impression.
But, like, the joke is that he's Arnold Schwarzenegger.
And that's nothing.
If I was Arnold Schwarzenegger, I might have sued this movie for defamation.
Once again, F-tier SNL shit. I need more for a feature film. Like in The Simpsons movie, they got the man himself. If you're not, like, I'm not here to fucking play games. Hoodwinked.
Sorry, I did scroll down to release to check and make sure it was a feature film. And it does say that it originally received a 1 week limited release in Los Angeles to qualify for Oscar consideration. And I was like, how are they going to consider this?
Just in case.
I mean, to be fair, Shrek got best animated.
I was going to say, back in 2005, it was a fucking shotgun. Who knows?
Garbage movie. Bad time.
I need you to not read the Wikipedia page as much as possible, please, because like I have so much to talk to you about. I don't want you to spoil it for yourself.
Sorry, I ended up at critical reception, and somehow on Rotten Tomatoes, it has a 46%, which is insane.
It's ridiculously high.
Massively high.
I need people to understand that I am not of the belief that
it should have a three.
A professional critic does not necessarily entail that their opinion is worth more than like public reception. But I need you guys to understand that as a mass, as a class of human being, we are incapable of consensus. And some of y'all motherfuckers are out there thinking it's funny. You think it's funny to give Hoodwinked a full 5 stars, a full 100% on Metacritic, and it's not funny. It's not funny to me.
I want to be fair. Rotten Tomatoes is very bad at deciding what number it's supposed to be. And it's possible nobody has added a review to it in years because who's watched this movie?
Yeah. And, you know, your opinion is valid and worthwhile. But also, I need you guys to stop giving Hoodwinked 5 stars or 100 on Metacritic and Rotten Tomatoes. You need to
stop. If you're going to give bad media 5 stars, give it to us.
Give it to me.
Yeah.
Specifically, come find me and give me 5 stars in sticker form. I'll find somewhere to put up.
That would be a very strange interaction. So, Granny has defeated the assassins and pulled her parachute out. This movie does not understand how parachutes work. It's not important. Pulls her parachute out, crash lands into her house.
Barely beating the wolf there.
Accidentally gets wrapped up in the parachute and shot into her closet.
Yep. And so you might be asking yourself, all right, so then it was all of it was a misunderstanding. And in fact, no one did anything. So we just spent 60 minutes and found out that nothing happened. But don't worry, guys, we have 20 minutes left to go. Red feels betrayed. We've talked about this. Red feels betrayed by Grandma. She hangs up her hood in the house and walks away in sadness.
Can I mention one quick thing about Red? Real quick.
Yeah.
But I have an important character design question for Red.
Okay.
Why is she in bell bottoms?
It's 2005. That's the only answer I have for you. This is like a choice that was made by 30-year-old dudes who were like, what do teen girls wear? Bell bottoms? And they were done.
I suppose you're probably right. It was very distracting. I don't think I even saw the bell bottoms for this part of the scene because the first time I fucking see her like full on walking somewhere.
And also, no, and I can tell you why. I also noticed it here. It's because when she leaves the house, there's like a full shot focused entirely on the bell bottom part of the bell bottoms. It's pretty egregious because I was also like, holy shit, has she been wearing this the whole movie? How has she been running anywhere?
Her pants should get caught up in the spokes of her bike all the time. There's so much extra material there. It's bad.
I used to be an avid bike rider, and I'm like a, you know, I'm a, I don't want to say how old I am, but like I'm an avid wearer of slim cut jeans, and I gotta tell you, even that gets like fucking like caught up in the chain sometimes. I cannot imagine dedicating any amount of excess material that is strictly exists to get caught up in those chains. And no, I didn't have a chain guard. I'm a big boy. I don't have training wheels either, okay?
So
I also don't have a bike anymore because it was stolen. It's all coming out today.
It's because you don't want to talk about this fucking movie.
Because the last 20 minutes of this movie are it's the only part of the movie that's a movie. It's where the plot happens here, but it sucks. It sucks so bad. Not only does it suck, but it revolves around a character who up until this point was a nuisance to my life. And voiced by a person who I think is just kind of a bad actor. Additionally, on top of all that. And a bad comedian. So there's a bunny in this movie.
Yeah, we didn't really talk about him.
His name is Boingo.
Yeah.
He hates everyone all the time. And you can feel it the moment he walks on screen. You're like, this bunny fucking hates every human being he interacts with. An animal being. This is the evilest creature. Makes Bunnicula look like an antihero. Like,
you are misremembering the Bunnicula books.
Is Bunnicula a hero? Are they good?
Bunnicula is nothing. The point of the Bunnicula books is the cat is convinced that Bunnicula is evil, and Bunnicula literally just sucks the juice out of vegetables.
I'm gonna be real with you. I never read those books because the covers were too scary for me as a kid.
They were not scary. They were not scary books. Not in the slightest.
I need to give you I need to tell you something about me as a 5-year-old that's going to really put this into perspective, which is that once I stayed up late enough to see the X-Files theme start, and it was so scary to me that I had nightmares for months.
Yeah, I mean, have I ever started reading a Wishbone book that looked a little creepy and then got too scared to finish it? Yes. I think I was a fucking dumbass as a kid. I was so scared of being scared.
No. I was just scared of everything all the time. Like, I had a fear in me.
I definitely had nightmares about the Scream character from Scream. Was it called Scream?
Yeah, yes, it was called Scream. The character is called Ghostface.
Terrible name.
Yeah, when I was about 7 or 8, I accidentally was allowed to watch It because it was on public television.
Oh, that was a mistake.
And that fucked me up for several years of my life. I think later on when I was in middle school, I got to catch The Omen and The Exorcist back to back on ABC. And I got to tell you, I wasn't really impressed by either of those films. So anyway, the bunny is stealing all of the recipes. His plan is that he's going to build a big factory. He's going to blow up the forest to make an even bigger factory. And he's going to put an addictive chemical called boingonium into all the treats because it's going to make people even more addicted. And no one can stop him.
As far as it goes,
it's not a bad plan.
It's not a terrible plan. I could see like Lex Luthor having this plan or something. It's just that, do you know the other part of the plan that Lex Luthor would have?
Defeating Superman.
Well, sure.
Unfortunately for Lex Luthor, that does need to be step one of every single one of his plans.
Goes without saying.
Step zero.
Step zero. No, you would have a plan to fucking frame somebody for these crimes. Because the police are just going to show up one day and be like, hey, are you using a lot of stolen stuff for this? Because we've been trying to find you, and here you are with a big factory. Like, he doesn't have a plan to deal with the police. He literally tells his fucking minions, don't worry about the police, they don't matter, I have this. And like, yeah, they do.
They matter a lot, as it turns out.
One of them's a fucking grizzly bear, man.
He seems to be willy-nilly. At first, I thought, oh, he's like off the cuff, like, ah, maybe I'll frame Red for this. But then he tries to kill her, and then he's like, ah, maybe I'll frame the wolf guy for this. And he gets a whole song number about how you gotta have, like, a fucking, like, itemized plan if you're gonna be an evil villain. And it's like, I'm not seeing it, though.
Yeah, it doesn't work. He also tells Red that she's been hoodwinked.
Oh, title drop. Did you like it?
I mean, did you like it, though? I sure made a note of it.
did it make you feel good? Did it make you really feel like you were watching Hoodwinked?
Andy, I already felt like I was watching Hoodwinked because I could not put these crimes on any other movie.
Sidebar, I pleaded for May to watch this movie with me so that I wouldn't be alone. And she refused. Not only did she refuse, but at one point I told her, don't pause the movie. If you have anything interesting to tell me, just interrupt me. Just tell me. And that way I can pay attention to that instead of watching this movie. And then later on, she was like, well, you told me not to bother you. And I was like, that's not what I said. That's not what I said. I said, please bother me. Just don't pause the movie while you're doing it. So Red sneak, like follows them up to the top of the mountain somehow and gets beat up by the bunny, even though she's a martial arts expert.
Yeah, but his ears are powerful.
Yeah. I got to take care of a bunny like today. I don't understand why she couldn't have like fought the four henchmen all at once and then lost, right? You know, like that.
They're pretty fragile creatures, or bunnies. Yeah, she gets thrown in the cable car with a bunch of dynamite.
Mm-hmm. Dynamite.
Mm-hmm. The dynamite was a bad joke, but the joke before that, where the squirrel says, oh, there's a bunch of candles in here, and Patrick Warburton goes, candles, light them up!
Light them up.
That was a good joke.
That's good. That's solid. I also really liked it when he's like, wow, they got a really bright flash. What kind of brand are these? Like, I want to pick some up for the house. I love candles, but you got to really, really think about where you are.
They're in a mine cart at the time. Like,
yeah, I also want to stress, as a person who like was around mines, they don't go leaving that shit in the carts, guys.
You're really not supposed to.
It is like such a bad idea to leave the dynamite anywhere but outside. That shit is on a like as you need it basis.
Yeah, anyway, she's gonna blow up. Granny, Wolf, and I don't even know
Woodsman,
this fucking guy's
Kirk.
Name.
Kirk.
Third guy, actor. Go to like save him. They do all this fight stuff, but I feel like it was mostly Granny, and then she's the one who goes out.
Yeah, she
to
does all
stop
the work.
The thing. And then fucking Wolf and Kirk are just kind of dicking around. They just do nothing. They're like, I guess we'll go get the car. And that's it. They're functionally done with this movie, and it's just going to be Granny and Red.
Granny saves Red. They drop the cable car full of dynamite into a river, killing a bunch of what I can only assume are sentient fish.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Also, this cable car is full of release lovers. I don't know if cable cars have as many release lovers as they seem to have in this movie. Maybe they do. It just seems like a lot.
I will say, it makes me feel like I don't ever want to be on a cable car if it's this easy to release them.
What the hell is the point of a release from the outside anyway? When am I going to be on top of the cable car?
And maybe it's for like servicing, but I just don't know. Somehow the cops line up the cable so that it leads into a van, and the bunny and all of the German skiers get put into the paddy wagon, and that's the movie. Except it's not.
I mean, there's an end credits scene, almost like a post. Like if this was a modern movie, this would have been after the credits. It is not made clear at the setup of this scene, and this is when I realized that this movie has no establishing shots. This movie establishes nothing before getting right into a scene. And this was what was most jarring, because this is clearly supposed to be weeks or months or maybe even a year or two later.
I think there is a title card that just says many weeks later.
Does it? I must have looked away for a second, because like they're just talking and I'm like, why are you guys...
It really feels like the beginning, and every scene feels like this, Tony, and it's why I kept bringing it up. It feels like you're just like coming back from credits into an SNL skit.
Yeah, so they're like talking about all that's changed, and I was like, I had no way of knowing that this was as far away as it clearly is. And they're entered into the Avengers initiative, but for fairy tales.
Yeah, the Nikki Flippers, again, great name for a frog detective.
Very good.
Recruits them because he sees potential in them. Although, and again, I hate to say it, but like Granny and Red did all the work. I don't get why Wolf and the
also has a job.
Yeah, I mean, they all have a job, Tony. Granny owns an enterprise.
But Granny is fucking two-faced about it and clearly does not want to run her company. So sure, she might go away and do this. And Red wants to get out of
The
forest.
The hidden... Like, no, wait. The Great Valley. Thank you.
The Hidden Valley Ranch. But Patrick Warburton is a successful newspaper columnist in a time when people still pay them. So, like, what's he doing?
Not only a successful columnist, and an investigative reporter. Those guys make the big bucks sometimes when they write books. They get books out of it, usually, is where they make the money. But, like, he's not doing
gonna
too bad.
Write a book called Hoodwinked. I mean,
oh, that would have been such a better framing device.
Yeah. Not an amazing one, but it would have been better.
If it was just Patrick Warburton being like, let me tell you a story about my biggest case.
That would have been good. By the way, that's a good Patrick Warburton.
I've been practicing for years to nail that. And that's the movie. And here's the thing is like, this movie is truly bad, Tony. This movie is truly bad.
Is it indeed?
And we're gonna play a little game here called I'm going to give you some data points, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Here are some movies that came out in 2005. Madagascar had a budget of $75 million. Chicken Little had a budget of $150 million. Robots had a budget of up to $80 million. Wallace and Gromit, The Curse of the Were-Rabbit, $30 million budget. The Corpse Bride, Tim Burton's Corpse Bride, $40 million.
Wait, is Corpse Bride 3D animated or is it actually?
So Corpse Bride and Wallace and Gromit are stop motion.
I knew Wallace and Gromit was, so I just need to check on Corpse Bride. Okay.
Corpse Bride, I believe, is stop motion. It was done by Leica, I believe.
Okay.
I need you to guess what the budget of this movie was.
Okay.
Also, its runtime is a solid 80 minutes, so I overestimated it, which is even more amazing.
Can't be worth more than Corpse Bride. They can't spend more money on it than Corpse Bride. I guess let's go with 28 million.
I need you to subtract 20 from that number. This movie was made for $8 million. It had a box office pull-in of $110 million.
Fuck off. Andy, you just told me all the other animated movies they could have been watching.
I'm gonna read to you. Well, we've seen some of these. I'm gonna read to you a quote from the director, Corey Edwards, and I love this quote.
I hate movies.
And I quote, I'll be real honest. There are many, many shots that I wince at when I see them, because it's not my standard of excellence. I know right. They could be better. But there comes a time at the end of the day where we just had to give up on some things. So to hear the critics and people on the internet like ranting about it, we all want to yell back and go, we know it's bad, but this is what we could do. And the fact that the film is successful in spite of that is really cool. Because it basically says to the industry not to continue to make poorly animated films, but to say, look at what the story and the charming characters did. Mm. They were able to surpass the bad animation and the technical problems, end quote. Now, I think Corey Edwards is a kind of a glass half full kind of guy.
Yeah, like, that would not have been my takeaway.
I feel like he is really putting a lot, and to be fair, Tony, this movie was never rewritten. They had a script. And once they started animating, they couldn't rewrite the script anymore because they couldn't afford to throw anything away. That is how shoestring budget this movie was. This movie was so shoestring budget, its animation studio was a rented house in California, in the Los Angeles area. And even then, they had to outsource the animation to the Philippines and India. Every corner that could be cut was cut on this movie.
Yeah, yeah. No, very clearly. Did the Weinstein Company throw money at this movie above the $8 million mark?
No.
By which I mean, like, was it basically made for $8 million and then they got Anne Hathaway? Because how do you get, like, fucking Exhibit to play a character in this movie?
That's such a great pull.
It's fucking weird.
So the movie was basically independently funded. And as it was being made, it was being shown to distributors. And basically, the other than, like, DreamWorks, who they turned down for some reason.
That's insane.
I know. Apparently, they didn't think it was a good deal, which is, again, an insane thing to say. It was picked up by the Weinstein Company because they had recently, like, cut their Disney deal. And they basically like recast the film, but all of that was all of that is included in the $8 million budget.
That is wild.
I'm going to give you another quote here. Quote, my feeling is you get two or three names on that poster, you're fine. Our Hoodwink poster has like a paragraph of names on it.
In the future, by the way, this is going to be a big red flag for me. Of like, wow, they have so many great people in this. Oh, you mean they threw people at this movie because it had nothing else. Now I know that.
But that's the industry standard now is the thing. Like I can't help but look at a modern movie poster and feel like that. Because that's just the standard now. And that pisses me off a little bit. But also it's like, it's just kind of the reality of the world. Like, you know, in today's kind of economy, you can't, it's very hard to sell a movie on just Will Smith is in it. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Like you used to be able to do that. You used to like, you know, you used to be able to be like, hey, this movie has, I guess Tom Cruise still does this. But, you know, like, this movie has Tom Cruise in it, and that's all you need to know.
Tom Cruise is, like, somehow, and frankly, I don't know how this happened, because I feel like people were really flagging on Tom Cruise, really sick of him.
Yeah.
But somehow Tom Cruise, like, looped back into being, like, the only movie star that can be, like, oh, my thing is that if I'm in a movie, then you'll know exactly what it is and what it's about and that you'll like it, you know?
Yeah, I do think that's a big part of it. And I think the other thing is that Tom Cruise has really, like, hit on something that people really like, which is, hey, I almost died making this movie. And that really does get people into seats. I haven't seen a Tom Cruise movie since Jack Reacher. But like, there is a shot in that movie where he straight up breaks his ankle, and I watched it happen. And I was like, "Holy shit! They kept that shot in the movie. That's crazy." And I do think that really is it. Is that we're all watching it, wondering which one of these is going to be the one he dies, and are they going to release it?
You'd probably know. In that there would be talk about how he died in a movie.
That'd be amazing. I mean, it wouldn't be amazing. It'd be horrible. It'd be a tragedy for everyone else involved. But, like, it's what he wants, I think. But, yeah, I think you're right. I think Tom Cruise is, like, he's the only actor of that generation who's still doing that. Everyone else is either not acting really anymore, like George Clooney, or has been, like, absorbed into this new way of doing movies, where it's, like, mm-hmm. It's not just Brad Pitt. It's not just Leonardo DiCaprio. It's fucking everybody. Everybody's in this movie. And it's kind of weird that, like, Hoodwinked in a way feels ahead of its time and also like it is encased in early 2000s amber.
So of its time.
Yeah.
The only cartoon character that can do extreme sports and have me care about it is Goofy Goof. No one else.
Mm-hmm.
Now that I think about it, the stuff that Granny did was also barely extreme sports. I mean, it was like Olympic events.
Yeah, I was going to say it was pretty standard stuff. Like,
it wasn't like alt sports, you know? It was like skiing. Like, I'm not saying skiing's not extreme, but like, I feel like that's not the cultural zeitgeist they thought it was at the time.
Yeah, she's not like base jumping. I guess she is free climbing, which is pretty fucking awful, like in terms of its safety record, but I don't know. It's like they're a cartoon character, you know?
They'll be fine. I know they'll be fine.
Yeah, it's not real. It's not like Tom Hanks in Polar Express.
What?
Like where I'm like, oh, that's a real person in a fake movie.
Oh, because it's a real guy. Yeah, well, Polar Express looks weird in a way that it's very hard to look at for me. So,
All of those are crazy. All right. Well, that was Hoodwinked.
Thank you for listening to Direct to Video. VHS, a podcast where repair movies like Fine Went. Wait, do I say that part? I don't care. I have been your host, Tony Robusto.
I have been your host, Andy Reyes.
I did want to make an announcement. Okay, you can find me at Theater Bats on Blue Sky or at inspiredbytrueevents.org, and also on April 11th, 2024. There will be a Kickstarter for a book coming out that I have a story in.
Whoa!
I know, right? It's radical. It's called A Summer of Sci-Fi and Fantasy Volume 3. I'm going to put a link, I'm reminding myself right now to put a link in the show notes.
Tony, you need to put that link in there.
I wrote a story about a Pied Piper character who's bad at it. I like it. I don't know if everybody else's stories are good. I haven't read them yet.
I have to ask you.
Yeah.
When it turned out that our last film was about a kind of Pied Piper story.
Oh, yeah.
How did you feel inside?
Andy, I fully forgot everything about that movie until this exact point.
That's amazing.
Fully, when you said that, I took a solid 5 seconds to figure out what you were talking about.
What the fuck, Andy, what the fuck are you talking about? Okay, never mind that question rescinded.
First, I was like, what movie did we watch last? Then I was like, wasn't it that cow movie? Then I was like, oh, yeah.
You're telling me you forgot about Alameda Slim?
I did. So soon? Until you said his name like that.
I live such a cursed life. I feel like you forget things.
Mm-hmm.
You live a life where things leave your mind. And I live a life where, like, I started watching this movie and I felt like I was watching it like 2 seconds ahead because my memories of it were like interrupting it. And so I had to kind of like live a dual existence. And now it will be forever ingrained in my adult memory. And I hate that. Next time we're going to be watching Hoodwinked 2. Oh, sorry. Shit. Fuck me. You can find me. Go to that Kickstarter thing. That sounds kick ass. I'm so excited. You can find me here at direct2.video, or you can find me at my other podcast, timehonoredpictures.com, or as somebody so eloquently put it, the Andy and Mavis Complain Hour, which I'm so, yes, that is exactly what it is.
I mean, it's pretty accurate. I think I listened to one episode where you were like, this was a good movie that we enjoyed.
It's tough.
And even that one, I think, project. You were like, wow, the doesn't really thread the needle on the concept of feminism.
No, but you know, it's a fun time, and that's kind of what we're just chasing. We're trying to find out where culture lives, and that's hard.
Yeah, it's there somewhere. Definitely, you find culture at the Oscars. Don't look anywhere else.
I'm hoping that I have some other projects that we're going to be launching soon, but who knows? I'm pretty busy. Work's been pretty crazy, so you know, look around, find me. I'm there, and join us next time for Hoodwinked 2, Hood versus Evil.
Hold up.
Yes.
I just want to say thank you to Scott Buckley.
Thank you, Scott.
Homeward. Hood versus Evil is a good name, but it's going to be a bad movie.
Is it a good name?
I am the ghost of John Smith.
I don't have a closer. Wait, can I hit this? I am the ghost of John Smith. Is that good? Was that good?